Okay, Alexander, let's talk about U.S.-Russian relations. And maybe you could say a couple of things about the passing away of Stephen Cohen, since we are talking about U.S.-Russian relations, just very, very briefly. And this headline is coming out of RT, and it says, U.S. envoy says Russia must agree to arms control deal with no NATO scale back, or else it's happy to modernize nukes without start. Now, this is an important development, and it's an important negotiating treaty that's been going on for a while, you know, off and on. And it looks like the U.S. is taking a very strong negotiating position. So, Alexander, what's going on with the START treaty? And once again, if you would like to maybe say very, very quickly about Stephen Cohen, and we can get into then the story.
I mean, I will indeed. I mean, Stephen Cohen, who has just passed away, is for me and for many people who were into Russian studies. I did a history degree, I should say, in the late 70s, early 80s at university at the University of London, which included doing a course in Russian studies at the School of Slavonic and East European Studies. Well, in those days, I mean, he was an absolute titan of Russian studies. He'd actually only started fairly recently, but everybody was talking about him then, and you know, he was widely recognized for his extraordinary insight and understanding of Russia and of Russian history. And the great thing about Cohen, the thing that always stood out for me about him, was that he was completely objective about the country. He was never blind to its many faults. He certainly wasn't blind to those faults when it was the Soviet Union, and he was absolutely not blind to its faults when it became Russia either. And yet at the same time, he clearly had this ability not to let this concern about these faults blind him to the, you know, other more positive realities, and also to the need, the overriding need, for the US and Russia to work together in order to secure peace. And I would say that more than anything else about Stephen Cohen, he was a man who was dedicated to preserving peace. I stress peace, by the way. I'm not talking about appeasement or anything of that kind. He was always an American patriot, despite what some people say. He was always somebody who sought peace. He understood that peace requires understanding of the other side and of their concerns. And he was also, and this is what I think I always valued in him most, somebody who always understood that that understanding meant getting into their history, understanding their culture, appreciating how the Russians have arrived at the present place in their history that they have, and not demonizing them. And I mean, he was a tremendous scholar, an immensely erudite man, an exceptionally wise man, and he will be greatly missed. So I speak now, as I say, personally. I had, by the way, very few dealings with him, and I will miss him, and I think all of us will. Now, let's now get to the topic of our discussion. Now, what is this all about? START is the strategic arms reduction treaties that have been agreed by the United States and Russia. Now, the important thing to understand is that the US and Russia, despite the end of the Cold War, remain the two preeminent nuclear powers. I mean, they account for well over 90% of the nuclear arsenals that exist in the world. I mean, China has some, Britain and France have some, a few other countries, India, Pakistan, Israel, probably, North Korea, unfortunately, they have nuclear weapons too. But the vast bulk of them are in the arsenals of the United States and Russia. Now, during the Cold War, starting in the 1960s, when there was an arms race underway between the Soviet Union and the United States, the leaders of those two countries decided that there was dangers, extraordinary dangers, to world peace in allowing this arms race to spiral out of control. and following an absolutely crucial summit meeting that took place in the United States in 1967 at a place called Glassboro between the US President Lyndon Johnson and the Soviet Prime Minister Alexei Kosygin. That set in train a series of negotiations which led to a whole succession of treaties. Firstly, there were the SALT I and SALT II treaties, which limited the growth of nuclear weapons possessed by both sides. They were negotiated by Nixon and Brezhnev. Nixon, the US president, Leonid Brezhnev, the leader of the Soviet Union at that time. And then in the 1980s, between Reagan and Gorbachev, at Ronald Reagan's suggestion, they moved forward to what were called START treaties. The START treaties were about reducing nuclear arsenals, and which had reached by the 1980s, you know, absolutely terrifyingly great levels. So that led to a succession of treaties between the United States and the Soviet Union, and then the United States and Russia, to reduce the number of nuclear weapons that each of these countries had. Now, what has happened over the last few years is that whilst the United States and Russia remain the preeminent nuclear powers, in other respects, the geopolitical balance has changed. And the single thing that's caused it to change most has been the rise of China. China is not a major nuclear weapons power, but it is clearly becoming a major military power. And of course, it is also a major economic power. And the US is increasingly starting to see China as its principal adversary, as opposed to Russia. So what the US wants to do is it wants to pressure Russia into agreeing to not just further cuts in Russia's own nuclear arsenal, but also to agree that China should enter these negotiations, not so much as a third party, because the US is very insistent that it should remain number one. What the US wants to do is to have the Chinese and the Russians negotiating as basically a single bloc, with the United States being able to retain more nuclear weapons than either of those two, and at the same time limiting the growth of the Chinese arsenal. Now, the Russians have said no. They said emphatically they're not prepared to agree to that. The Chinese have also said no. They're emphatically not prepared to agree to that either. This interview, which Mr. Billingshi, the US principal arms negotiator, has just given to a Russian newspaper, basically says to the Russians, if you don't agree, you have an arms race. The United States will scrap the last treaty limiting nuclear weapons, which is due to expire at the end of this year, and it will then press ahead and develop as many nuclear weapons as it needs. The Russians are saying in response, bring it on. If you do that, we will match you. And what it is in effect, I think, is the US trying to pressure the Russians to agree to China being included in these negotiations on American terms, and the Russians resisting.
What about the NATO thing?
The point about NATO is, of course, Britain and France have their own nuclear arsenals. The Russians have said, if you're going to include China, then logically you must also include Britain and France. And they also want to start talking about nuclear weapons that the United States is going to be basing in Europe, which used to be covered by a different sort of treaties, like the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. Billingshi is saying, absolutely not, we're not prepared to negotiate about that. So he is basically piling on the pressure on the Russians, both with NATO, both on the NATO side and in terms of an arms race. It's all based on the calculus that the Russians can't sustain an arms race of that kind. I think that is, by the way, an unwise calculation, And I think this policy, this way of going about this, is wrong. I think that, on the contrary, the Russians have shown that they will match US military expansion in terms of nuclear weapons and can do it. They have the means to do it and the resources to do it. And I think that what we see again here is some people in the Pentagon and the national security establishment taking a very hard line in negotiations. I think Donald Trump, who is the president, who's fighting an election, is going along with it for the moment. He is the great deal maker. He says to himself, if I can pressure the Russians into concessions by taking this very hard line, I will. But I think his actual instinct is and remains what it has always been and what he wanted to do when he was first elected, which is actually improve relations with the Russians as a means to the same end, rather than threaten them. I think Trump has a better understanding of the Russians than some people in the Pentagon and the State Department do. But they are running this at the moment.
And you mentioned about the Russians matching the U.S. I mean, they'll match it in a different way, though. Yes. I mean, an asymmetric way, i.e. with hypersonic or supersonic weapons. I mean, the Russians are pretty far further ahead.
Yes, this is the fundamental difference. You see, in the old days, in the 60s and 70s and 80s, the Soviets said, you know, if the US builds a missile, we will build a missile. If the US has a bomb, we will have a bomb. They wanted always a numerical parity. And of course, that was incredibly expensive, both for them and for the US, but especially for them, because they had a much smaller economy. And, that would be unsustainable. But today, the Russians have a completely different perspective. They say, we don't need to match the US in everything. What we need to do is to develop weapons, highly sophisticated weapons, which at the same time will cost us far less, but which will enable us to maintain a balance of terror with the US. We can still destroy the US just as they can destroy us. So they're building hypersonic weapons. They're building nuclear-powered cruise missiles. They're building nuclear-powered torpedoes with nuclear-powered torpedoes. They're going for weapons, new weapon systems, which for the moment the US doesn't have. And they consider themselves to be in the lead with those.
And how far along is China compared to Russia and the US?
Oh, it is far behind. I mean, the Chinese have been doing some tests on hypersonic glide vehicles, but they're certainly behind the US in that. And they're far, far behind the Russians. The Russians at the moment have a lead in hypersonic missiles and hypersonic glide vehicles. If you're talking about intercontinental ballistic missiles, you know, the usual strategic missiles, the ones that can be used to, you know, go over into intercontinental ranges, Chinese ones are not comparable to those that the Russians and the Americans have, and nor are Chinese nuclear submarines comparable to the Russian or American ones. And, the Chinese are technologically far behind both the Americans and the Russians, and they're also far behind in numerical terms. The only way they could catch up fast, because these are very difficult technologies, the only way they could catch up fast is if the Russians lent them the technology, which I don't, by the way, think the Russians are going to do.
All right. And finally, Alexander, I imagine my hunch is listening to what you said as well, and my hunch is that after the election, should Trump get reelected, he'll tackle this. He'll actually put some personal attention into this. Now, it's probably not even a good idea to even deal with this, given the whole Russia stupidity that the Democrats like to trot out every now and then. So probably the tough, hard line actually works to his benefit on the campaign trail, or at least in reference to the Democrats not having any talking points. Like, Trump is ready to negotiate with Putin and stuff like that. So he'll just probably let this continue, let the war of words continue and the tough talk continue. And then after the election in his second term, where he has a lot more leeway and a lot more political capital, he'll be able to hammer out an acceptable deal. and deal with China, which I think is absolutely the number one priority right now in the U.S. Is foreign policy perspective. I mean, China is their number one contender.
Absolutely. I think that is exactly right. I think that's exactly what Donald Trump wants to do. He can't afford, unfortunately, to be seen to be getting on with the Russians at the moment because of the way in which this whole debate has been completely distorted by the way in which the Democrats have played Russia to hit him, to damage him. So he can't do that. But his instinct always has been, and it is the right instinct, not to threaten and bully the Russians, which will simply make them even closer to the Chinese than they are already, but to try to win them over, to be more, you know, to negotiate with them. I mean, he's talked about very straightforwardly, you know, one of the things he's very keen on doing is opening up the Russian economy to a US investment. I mean, this is not a secret. He's talked about it. So that's what I think his agenda has been all along. If he wins re-election in November, as I firmly believe, I think we will hear far less of this and far more of that, of the US reaching out finally to Russia and carrying out the kind of foreign policy that Donald Trump had originally wanted to carry out when he was first elected, which he spoke about on the campaign trail in 2016, and which he wasn't able to do for 4 years because of a hoax conspiracy which never existed and which consumed the political system in the United States and which has empowered some very dangerous people with some very dangerous ideas in the Pentagon and in the military industrial complex and all of the rest, whose only solution to the US's strategic problems is an arms race without end. Now, you know, I don't think Donald Trump likes that. I think that's what he wants. He's already made it very clear. We did a program about him and James Mattis recently, how frustrated he was with Mattis because of Mattis's inability either to win wars or end them. And I think he thinks exactly the same way about the nuclear weapons questions. He has no desire to see the United States trapped in a permanent arms race. And he does understand that the Chinese situation needs to be dealt with. And he has concerns about that, which are, from an American point of view, entirely understandable concerns. But he certainly doesn't want to be taking on the Russians and the Chinese at the same time. And that's, I think, what the focus of his foreign policy will be.
All right. We'll leave it there. Alexander Mercuris, thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on that red subscribe button underneath this video. Like, share, and also drop us a comment. Let us know what you think about this story. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps out this channel. Another thing that helps out this channel is when you go to the Durant shop and pick up some merchandise. We've got mugs, we've got hats, we've got t-shirts, we've got all kinds of great things with country flags on them. And also, if you go to the Patriotic Legacy website and you pick up a Patreon Beacon 3 flashlight, we have a contest going on from our partners, our good friends and partners at Patriotic Legacy, a contest for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, where you can win a Patriot Beacon 3 pink in pink color. It is a very good looking flashlight, very good looking flashlight. And with that flashlight, you may also win a Duran USA Magic mug as well. So when you make a purchase at Patriotic Legacy, that website, the link is in the description box down below. You're entered in the contest to win the pink Patriotic Beacon 3 and a Duran USA mug. And it is in honor, in reference to Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And also use the code Duran20 as well in checkout, on the checkout, because you will get a 20% discount at the Patriotic Legacy website. The Duran shop website is also in the description box down below. Alexander.
This is, of course, the Patriot Beacon 3. For those who don't know, it is the best flashlight in the world, made in the United States, ships internationally, just as Alex said. I say it is the best flashlight because it has this incredible, powerful, beautiful beam. You can dim it if you need to, if you're in an enclosed space or you've got people around you. You can also use it if you're walking down a road. You can have it flashing to alert people to the fact that you are there. It's also got, you know, extraordinary other things you can do with this. Alex calls it the Swiss Army knife of flashlights because it's got all of these extraordinary abilities to do things. So one, it's solar powered, so you don't need to worry about putting batteries, and you don't need to worry if you keep it in the light during the day. You don't need to worry that during the dark it will actually expire on you, because it is solar powered. In fact, you can use it to recharge. You've got a port there. You can use it to recharge your smartphone or your tablet or even your laptop if you need to. So it's got that extraordinary quality. You can also use it to as an alarm. It's got an alarm in the handle. You can just perhaps hear it there. If you get lost, there's a compass in the handle also. So, you know, you've got no GPS no sat nav or anything of that kind. You can always use that. You've got a compass, which is very useful when you're, you know, walking in forests or woods or on the hills, as I do. You can use it as a tool because it can be used as a hammer, as you can see. But also, and this is purpose designed, if there's an accident in a car and you need to get somebody out of that car, you can tap the windscreen with it. You tap it in the four corners and the windscreen will go. And then you've got a seatbelt cutter to cut anybody that needs to be cut out. So it's got all of these extraordinary things. It's also got a magnet there on the side. You can see it there. So that you can use if you've got a steel or metal plate. You can stick it on that, and it's immediately within reach. But the thing that is absolutely wonderful about the Peugeot Beacon 3, apart from all these wonderful things it can do and this extraordinary wonderful clear beam that it has, is that it is so well made. It is so strong and rugged. You just feel its quality when you hold it, and that gives you tremendous assurance and confidence when you have it with you, that you are holding a quality item, and that gives you that sense of security that comes with that. It's one of those wonderful products of that exceptional quality that is made in the United States. As Alex rightly says, it ships internationally. This is in black, but the one that is now in this competition is pink, and it is for Breast Cancer Awareness Week. So please go to the Patriotic Legacy site, and Alex will remind you at the end of this program, this broadcast, how to do that. And of course, it comes with one of our mugs. This is the mug in question with the flag of the Great Republic, the United States. And just to say, we were doing a program about the United States and Russia. Here is a mug with the Russian flag, rather smaller, but which gives you an idea that we've got flags of both countries, but also, you know, mugs of different sizes too. This is perhaps a better mug for, a certain types of tea, for example, a really strong oolong tea. It would be better with this mug, whereas this one is perfect, by the way, for coffee or hot chocolate. They're the best mugs in the world. I even drink beer from them, and on a few occasions, champagne. So it gives you an idea of what great mugs they are. And of course, we don't just have mugs in our shop. We also have the world's best shirts, or the world's best t-shirts. They also come with country flags. This one is the Australian flag. It's a short sleeve t-shirt, but we also have long sleeve t-shirts. We got the most amazing polo shirts you will find anywhere, that many of them come with flags of many countries. And in fact, if you are looking for a mug with your country's flag or a shirt with your country's flag, I'm sure you'll find it in our shop, if not now, then before very soon. And we've also got, as well as these amazing shirts embroidered and with all these flags, we also have hoodies and hats. Our hats are just amazing, by the way. They're just phenomenal embroidered hats and trucker's hats and baseball hats, and you'll find them. Well, there you go. That's I think that's Switzerland. So that gives you an idea. Alex is holding one. There is the flag of the Swiss Confederation. So there it is. It's just amazing hats that we now have in our shop. All, as I said, superb items. We also, by the way, never to forget that we've also got really good ebooks that you can read, which cover many of the topics we've discussed on our programs. So come to our shop, support the Duran, buy these great things, absolutely join this competition for a Patriot Beacon 3. Just to remind you what it is, here it is again in pink for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And Alex will remind you how to do all of those things.
You'll find the link for the Patriotic Legacy and the Patriot Beacon 3 underneath this description box down below. And you'll also find a link to the Duran shop as well in the description box down below. Alexander Mercurius, thank you very much. Till next time, everybody, take care.